2 hours of Gary Null on the air this morning, his long-awaited investigative reporting on the conflict at WBAI and his effort to heal this conflict. Came in after, in his words, hundreds of emails came to his attention, and thousands of hours of doing an investigative reporting with the various parties. He spent about half hour introducing the subject, covering his history at BAI and his history in commercial radio, and then he spent maybe 4 to 5 minutes with Bernard White, program director in exile, band producer from WBAI, who has had some 20 years history of service to the station. Then followed by, well, Bessie Wash, the executive director of the Pacifica Foundation, given her take on what had gone on at the station. Well, joining us at WBAI Radio in exile are two people, one you heard with Gary Null, Bernard White, and the other, Dennis Monahan, from the Pacifica campaign, who are on the air. And we're going to be entering into a discussion as to what Gary Null had to say. And also, I'm here. I am Errol Maitland. I have been a listener to WBI for some 30 years. I, first and foremost, was a volunteer at WBAI, then a member of the paid staff of Wake Up Call. I did almost every job at WBAI that there was to be done by someone who worked there, from cleaning the floor to hosting Wake Up Call on occasion to producing marathon programs and the like. Done it all, especially lots of remote broadcast. I'm a shop steward. I'm a member. I'm the staff representative to the local advisory board. I was present at several board meetings where decisions were made. I have talked to several parties over the years about what's taken place with Pacifica before there was this open situation in New York today. I was quoted in the New York Times calling the former executive director of the Pacific Foundation, Pat Scott, a petty dictator. So I have been one who have spoken up on the issue, and I know Valerie Van Isler. I respect Valerie Van Isler as a human being, as a producer, and someone who has guided WBAI for the past 10 years. I don't always agree with what she's done at WBAI, but I think always she was someone who tried to maintain the integrity and independence of WBAI, and she's fought long and hard against Pacifica. She's also tried to preserve WBAI, and being caught in the middle, sometimes you don't win on either side. So, now, Bernard White, you've had time to reflect on the discussion with Gary Null. Was there anything that you want to reiterate or any point that you would like to reinforce or anything you said that you would like to elaborate more on? Hold on a second. I got to bring you up. Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead, Bernard.
The forum itself, because, you know, my going on and then being followed by Bessie Wash, some of the issues I raised were not addressed by Bessie. Some of the real important points. For instance, there is, she said that what she did wasn't illegal, but there is a part of the letter of agreement, you've seen it, that says quite clearly that you cannot remove a station manager unless it's done with consulting with the local advisory board as well as the paid staff, and that was not done. So he didn't bring that issue to her. The whole issue of, you know, she was doing what was best for the station. Now, I don't understand how she was doing what was best for the station, you know, because the old adage, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. We were moving forward. We had a record amount of people listening to the station. We were breaking records in every fundraiser that we had. We had increased our subscriber base. We had a $70,000 surplus. It would seem to me that what Bessie Walsh could have done was say, hey, this isn't happening anywhere else in the network. Let's sit down and talk about how we can duplicate this phenomenon throughout the network. But instead, what she did was say that she was doing what was in the best interest of the network, which is far from the case. When you look at what has happened to WBAI, and I told her that this would happen if she pursued that course, that, you know, here we are now with one of the lowest listenerships. I've come into contact with people all throughout our listening area who say they just can't listen anymore. Another issue that was raised Jose Santiago, who was among the first to really begin to collaborate, I find out, with Pacifica. I stated from the very beginning that I would not collaborate with anyone that Pacifica put in. And it didn't matter that it was Jose. It mattered that, you know, this process violated the established procedure. And the direction in which the Pacifica board was going, that this was right in line with how, you know, the thuggery that they have institutionalized throughout the network. So I was not going to go along and participate in their thuggery, in their takeover of WBAI.
Before you continue, I just want to know if Dennis, can you hear Bernard?
I sure can.
Okay, good, beautiful. So this little gadget here is working, folks. Remember now, we're doing this with chewing gum and a little bit of spit. I won't tell you who spit, but that's what we're doing. Now,
that.
Okay, look, Bernard, one of the things that Bessie Walsh talked about that Gary Null did not question her on is that Valerie Van Isler was removed because of the direction in which the station was going. And it was not going in the direction that Pacifica is going in. Now, we have come through a lot of crisis at WBAI. We have come through a lot of challenges with Pacifica. We have come through the repression of the Republican and the Gingrich era when NPR wanted us to tone our program down, when Pat Scott wanted us to lay off criticizing and reporting on the Republican shenanigans in Congress and elsewhere. Now, what is, do you have any sense as program director, what is this direction that she wanted to take Pacifica in? What goals was it that she wanted for WBAI?
Well, all we can go by is those radio stations that they praise. Those radio stations that they are praising, like WPFW, KPFT, and KPFK, have dramatically streamlined their personnel. They've gotten rid of a lot of the volunteer producers, a lot of the diversity, and they have narrowly focused their programming on particular issues. KPFK got rid of a lot of their Mexican producers, their African-American producers, and they are, producing without them. KPFT got rid of the diversity that they had. They are now just playing primarily country and Western music. WPFW got rid of a lot of its public affairs programs, and they are just playing jazz music. So this is what what they're saying is what's positive about the network. And to our mind and to anyone who's read the Pacifica Mission, that is running contrary to the Pacifica Mission, which is about bringing in diverse communities, about trying to build bridges amongst and between people, about doing training. Those kinds of things are not happening at those radio stations that they're touting as being exemplary of what good radio is all about. So that's primarily what we have to go by. Now, at WBAI, it appears that the most political programming, the most successful programming has been its political programming, and what they've done is they've gutted that. They've either fired, banned, or removed the people who were had the most successful political program. So, you know, we can see that there is certainly a move here. What the final vision will look like, I don't know, but right now there's attempt to get rid of these political producers.
Well, according to the Amsterdam News, you're listening to the real WBAI over at www.wbix.org. In terms of the goals of BAI and the direction, Gary Null did mention something about Castro. Okay, now, I want to know from you, as program director, who Bessie Watts said she has spoken to, have they in any way spoken to you about two programs that I've come to hear about, because I was absent from BAI and not listening for nearly a year, thank goodness. I missed a lot of this stuff that went on. Castro, the 5.5 hours worth of programming that was broadcast on Fidel Castro, live from Riverside Church, WBAI, and the Arab Palestinian program on the right of return. Now, were those programs come under any criticism, to your knowledge, from the National Office of Pacifica?
Well, yes, they did. What happened with the right of return, that happened on a Saturday, I think, back in September. On that Wednesday of the following week, I was in a week-long conference in San Diego, and I was confronted by Steve Yasko, who began to question me about why we had this program on the air, whether we had received any money, did it go up on the satellite. And, you know, I told him that, you know, we don't receive money for programs. We didn't have it up on the satellite, but it went on the Internet, and that why is he asking me all these questions about this program? He told me that they had gotten a complaint from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and that he was asking questions because Bessie Watts was concerned about the program. Later on that evening, at about 12:30 at night, I got a call from Bessie Watts making all kinds of demands about things that I had no knowledge of. She was telling me that the program had to come down off the website. I didn't know what she was talking about. I had to write her a written report. I told her that I was not going to write her a written report, that she was not my supervisor, that what she needed to do was to go to my supervisor, who was Valerie Van Isler, and present it to her, and then if Valerie wants me to give her a report, that, you know, that would happen, but that, I, you know, just like she wouldn't want anybody coming into her shop asking someone to write a report without, you know, without her knowledge, that I wouldn't violate that protocol either. So later on I found out that the people who were giving the march had put down on the website a phrase saying for the program would be screened over WBAI 99.5 FM, and that was it. And I didn't know why this hysteria had broken out over the right of return, but I refused to get hysterical along with it. The Castro situation, we had, of course, because of our work around Cuba, and because WBAI has always been a place where people can come and get independent information about Cuba, those people who were putting on the forum at Riverside Church wanted us to cover it. We offered it to Pacifica. Pacifica didn't want to have anything to do with it. And then they came just before the date and said that not only did they want to have something to do with it, but that they wanted to have Don Rush, their reporter, be the anchor for it. Now, we had been, like I said, we've been covering Cuba for years, and we have people here who are capable of doing that broadcast. So we had Deepa Fernandez as well as Mario Murillo, who were going to do the broadcast, and we were not going to take them off of it and put Don Rush on it because it just didn't make sense. I mean, he has no knowledge of either the community and has always talked negatively about Cuba. So they became extremely angry. In addition to that, the people at Riverside Church, the security was extremely tight. They had a cutoff period. They came in behind the cutoff period, so Don Rush, they wouldn't allow Don Rush to come in. In addition to that, there was some sentiment about, because these are people politically aware, that Pacifica, you know, the activities of Pacifica, so they didn't want to violate the strike that is going on by the Stringers. So all of that meant that, you know, Don Rush could not come in. Pacifica became extremely angry about it. Valerie was threatened over the issue. She was told that if she didn't get Don Rush in, there would be a price to pay for it. And here we are.
I want to bring someone from the Pacifica campaign, and this Dennis Monahan, who works at the Pacifica campaign. I don't know how much Dennis has known about Pacifica, but the name of Andrea Sisco came up. There are talks now by Gary Null that his office was broken into, that his computers filed were gone through, and documents stolen from his office. Now today he has made allegation that Andrea Sisco has been threatened and that files have been, her computer has been broken into, and that she has been targeted and for, I guess, physical and verbal abuse. It seems it's a theme that is coming up over and over again, that people are physically being threatened and her livelihood is at stake. Does the Pacifica campaign, which is one of the most visible organizations today leading the fight to reclaim Pacifica, has it made any threat against Andrea Sisco or other members of the national board that it's trying to house?
Hello, Al and Bernard. Certainly, the Pacifica campaign is stridently encourages every form of constitutionally protected nonviolent action to force the resignation of these board hijackers. But threats are not needed. We feel that, nor would we undertake such, you know, that's absolutely false. We have nothing to do with threats of any kind or any violent activity that's alleged. There has yet to be any proof of any violence whatsoever from any element of the movement to restore Pacifica. There is a cascade of allegations that Pacifica has been promoting from its former board chair, David Acosta, on down to the increasingly large number of public relations firms that have been sequentially hired and then tossed to the curb. Most recently, in the June 15th edition of Newsday, there was an article where the new PR guy from that Pacifica hired was quoted as saying that we were using McCarthyite tactics and intimidation against board members, but this is all specious rumor-mongering and an attempt to discredit a mass of many thousands of people who are committed to disciplined nonviolent action. So it's just a standard, tired old tactic to discredit people. And the people in this movement, like you both, who've been doing this for decades, are probably not surprised by it, but it does require that we counter it, and I appreciate this opportunity.
The campaign does engage, however, in digging up information on these individuals, exposing their background, such as the background of Michael Palmer and his role with Makila Doros and other people in the statements that they have made, public statements that they have made. These are things that the campaign does. Now, there is a call, or there have been calls to boycott board members' places of their business places and their places of residence. Now, do you all feel that these actions are outside of the bounds of the constitutionally protected activities? Do you feel that any of these activities are illegal? Have the government challenged you on any of these activities?
No, I don't know of any government. There has been the, as you know, both at WBAI and at KPFT, police have been called in. People have been brave enough to engage in nonviolent civil disobedience at WBAI with the local advisory board, insisting on meeting at the space and forcing Utrice Lead to stand up on her position that the public will not be allowed in the station by calling in the NYPD, and there were officers from the intelligence division, a very notorious division of the NYPD. So she invoked her allies and the police. Then we have KPFT with station manager Garland Ganter. And excuse me, we have there's always a buzz of activity here at the campaign office as we abut in the basement of Kunstler's old office, the Kunstler Fund with Randy Credico. There's always a tremendous amount of activity. So Randy's hard at work right now. But,
well, let's try to ignore Randy.
Some leafleters were attacked by Garland Ganter and his wife, Molly O'Brien, and one of them, Edwin Johnston, after being tackled by Ganter and another listener while they were leafleting outside at a KPFT fundraiser, was charged with assault against Molly O'Brien.
Well, let's put it on the record now, Dennis, that I also was accosted at that station, something I haven't...
I witnessed it, by the way, and it was disturbing and humorous at the same time, if we're talking about the same incident.
Yes, we are, and we have never discussed it publicly before, but you know, I want people to know that I am not neutral in this situation. I'm trying to be objective, but I'm not neutral. So, you know, I was attacked by a staff member at KPFT. My sign was ripped out of my hand, and you know, hey, they're lucky I wasn't feeling too well that
March, when we were all down in Houston for the national board meeting, and we got a hold of a memo that Garland Ganter had written to the staff about a heightened security for the week surrounding the weekend board meeting, and that there were going to be, the doors were going to be locked and no one was to answer the door. And so we drove by the station and were posing for pictures, and I actually went up and they rang the buzzer and they let me in. And I went in and started distributing the Pacifica campaign flyer around the inside. And they actually have two full-time paid DJs. And so Mike in the afternoon, the paid DJ there, was following me around and asked me what I was doing. And I said I was just promoting some literature. And so he threw us out. He threw me out. And then you were standing up on the stoop posing in front of the Fortress KPFT with a sign that said, end the gag rule. And Mike... in a very cowardly fashion, whipped the door open, grabbed the sign out of your hand, pulled it, and slammed the door shut. So he was actually gagging your effort to expose the gag rule. And it was very telling, and it was an exquisite metaphor for Pacifica management. I'm only regret that we didn't get an actual photo of him, his hand reaching out, because that's all we saw of him. But we do have you staring at the door that had just been slammed on your face.
You know, Errol, it is important that the Pacifica campaign does get information about the background of these board members for several reasons. And one of the major reasons is that you need to know the orientation of these folks that are on the national board. They are... Some of them are people who have come from some of the worst industries in this country in terms of, you know, their violation of human rights, their disregard for the safety and of workers, their disregard for the life of individuals who might find themselves to be physically challenged. These people are representative of those agencies and representative of a particular mindset. They believe in top-down management. That is their orientation. Once the local advisory board relationship was severed with the national board, you didn't have people who coming onto the national board who were involved in community activities, involved in supporting community struggles. These people are part of their resume, you don't see anything about community struggles. You see them involved with building maquiladoras in Mexico, in stopping folks from setting up unions at their workplace. These are the kinds of activity, and that's just some of it, that they're involved with. So that needs to be exposed so that people can see where these people come from. So I think that it's a good thing that the Pacifica campaign is gathering this information and letting people know these folks should not be anonymous. It should be known who they are and what their orientation is.
Now, I can hear, and this is directed to Dennis, the race card being played out now that you're targeting a black woman with a PhD and you're threatening her livelihood. What has led up to the targeting of Andrea Sisco, and in what way is she targeted?
Well, Errol, as you are a member of the local advisory board, you know better than I do that she has been formally recalled from her position. She lied to the community and to the LAB before, I think it was the February 98 vote.
February 99.
To change the bylaws and to cut out the local advisory board in the community thereby. So, she has betrayed the trust that was placed in her. She has gone on to side with the board majority in altering the foundation and causing irreparable harm to the network. So we're joining in thousands of people calling for her resignation from the board. And how do we do that? Well, because they've become unaccountable, they've made themselves imperious and unassailable through legitimate means. We have to, or not that, you know, the traditional means of nominating board members, recalling board members, they no longer answer to the community. So we have to mobilize pressure, and we've done that as the two tactics of the campaign, to shut off the money and to organize massive pressure to force their resignation. So Andrea Sisco, because of her conduct on the board, has been identified as one of the hijackers. And we've just researched ways, particular pressure points. And part of that is to hold them accountable to their community and the immediate community of her neighborhood in Fort Greene, Brooklyn. We want her neighbors to know that she's involved in the crisis at WBAI. Many New Yorkers know about the WBAI crisis, and it's good to put a face behind, you know, the crisis. The fact that she is a diversity sensitivity trainer at mostly large multinational corporate clients as they attempt to kind of I think mostly avoid discrimination lawsuits and harassment lawsuits. But let's just, you know, even on its face, okay, it's good to train your workers on issues of diversity and sensitivity. So she's a trainer in that regard. And yet anyone who's listened to BAI for the last 6 months knows that the management and thereby the board have countenanced outrageous acts of lack of sensitivity, harassment, of sexist and racist nature. So who is she to identify herself as a professional sensitivity diversity trainer while at the same time this foundation that she is a director of is engaged in this kind of hostile behavior? So we want people in her industry to know exactly what it is that she countenances with her silence on the board. And there have been very explicit multi-page descriptions of the harassment sent to her by email from staff members of BAI, and she has never responded, nor has any of Betsy Wash or Steve Yasko, any of these people, Pacifica Management. They, rather than responding to legitimate complaints and grievances, they just spend their time engaging in hollow witch hunts and hiring PR firms to attack both the resistance movement and the staff members who criticize them openly. So.
Now, I just, you know, want to add to that, two points, that the local advisory board at WBAI, in addition to asking Andrea Sisko and Frank Millspar to resign some years ago, just in our last meeting have passed a resolution drafting a letter to send to Andrea Sisko, and I'll move to have people other than myself from the local advisory board to speak on that issue, asking her to do the decent thing, that is to resign. But how about the question of going to places like Coca-Cola and at a place that she worked to heighten the hypocrisy of what she has done? And also people like Epstein, Becker and Green, John Murdoch, going to their seminars and other events, or even Ken Ford and National Home Builders, and protesting their action. Now, I would imagine that those have come on the criticism, and in some cases some of those things may be deemed to be illegal, but nonetheless they're civil disobedience tactics. Are people willing to be arrested for action that may be deemed, trespassing or disruptive of meetings? What is going on when these things have happened? Has people left meetings when they're asked to leave, or are people willing to sit down and face arrest? I know on the part of the local advisory board, 9 people went to jail because they believe so strongly in the issue of BAI, and they did it in a nonviolent manner, and I need to stress that people have behaved in a nonviolent manner, albeit manners that are disruptive in many cases to the operations. But people have not damaged equipment or threatened or physically threatened people with bodily harm, as has been constantly being reported from this side of the movement, from those who are resisting the corporatization and the forceful direction, the new direction, unstated direction in which Pacifica want to take WBAI and the other stations.
Much to the chagrin of the opposition, people are very willing and to risk arrest in nonviolent opposition to this illegitimate power that we're facing. So there have been sit-downs with the LAB, also against Epstein, Becker, and Green in San Francisco. Also, the discontent with management has been brought to a lot of these public events to hold the board members accountable and essentially to shame them in front of their peers. And so Ken Ford was quite a matter of discussion, I'm sure, at the recent National Association of Home Builders Board of Directors meeting. 1,500 people gathered at the Washington, D.C. Hilton Towers and Hotel, so-called Hinckley Hilton, and a number of us were there letting them know with a picket outside, and there were people inside that were got into the board meeting and brought their discontent with Ken Ford to the very core of that powerful organization.
You know, before I move on to Bernard White with the next question, I went to a meeting I'm also a plaintiff, by the way, in one of these lawsuits, the LAB lawsuit, the lawsuit filed by the local advisory board after Andrea Sisko, who went to San Francisco pledging that she would vote even to table the bylaw changes. That's all she was asked to do, vote to table the bylaw changes until the local advisory board, the staff, and the community had a chance to study what impact it would have on the station back in February of 1999 when she voted to make the change. And I will go so further as to say at this point on the record that I was within earshot of Andrea Sisko prior to that vote and Mary Frances Berry, and Mary Frances Berry was offering her consultancyship with the agency with which she, Mary Frances Berry, worked for in Washington. So I don't feel any compunction about taking away or denying income to Andrea Sisko. I say no justice, no profit. And Andrea Sisko, who has done an injustice to Pacifica and to the listeners and to the wishes of the people, who elected her to the National Advisory Board, she should not benefit from that. And she has a simple thing to do, that is to step down from the Pacifica Board if she does nothing else. In her position as a diversity trainer, she should be espousing the violence that's going on against these patients and against individuals who have been physically attacked or intimidated by so many people who are now in charge of this network. That needs to be, I think, to be addressed. I also sat in a meeting with Dale Temchin, who says that he is quite proud of the fact that he worked for a law firm that engaged in union busting, that engaged in representing managers and corporation and finding ways to escape the labor laws in this country. He's quite proud of that. So, you know, let's be clear of the animals that we are dealing with. And on that point, Bernard, Gary Noe, and I try to reach Jose Santiago on this. Jose Santiago, in a meeting which I attended after the coup, stated quite clearly that he was not eviscerated, that no one had threatened him at the station, but maybe he is now singing a different tune, and I would like to get Jose Santiago or invite him on the record to talk to the people who are listening to WBIX as to what his take is on how he was passed over for or why he rejected the job as general manager of Pacifica. Now,
I'm just hearing that because we didn't know how long Jose had been in contact with Bessie, which means that he had been walking around all of that time, not letting, well, he didn't let me know. I can't say he didn't let anyone know. But he didn't let me know that, you know, this was being thought about, that this was about to go down. And, you know, one of the frustrations that people felt in that meeting was here was somebody that they had been talking to on a daily basis who never let them in on what was going on, and that they should have realized that Pacifica did not have the best interests of WBAI or the other radio stations at heart. All you had to do was look at their behavior and see what some of the things that they had been involved with over the last couple of years. And you can see quite clearly that they were not interested in moving the stations forward, that they had become very heavy-handed in their approach to the stations, that they never spelt out what direction it is that they were interested in going in publicly. But we found out that there were a lot of things that they were saying privately that seemed to bear out when we looked at what was happening at the other stations that they were giving all of this praise to. So Jose, you know, when to say that he was just attacked, that's not really being accurate. There were people who were extremely disappointed in him because of his behavior, because they felt that he had betrayed them. And, you know, there's a lot of evidence to show that, yeah, that people were betrayed, that they felt that that no one should have been involved in that kind of behavior. So Gary Noe didn't seem that Jose, or Gary didn't report, didn't tell that I at that meeting stood up and said, listen, Jose is one of our co-workers. We should have respect for what it is that he said, and we shouldn't disrespect him. We disagree with him. That's fine, but there should be no disrespect. I mean, that was left out of what it appears, either what Jose told him or what Gary reflected. Because, you know, it was always about trying to stay together. There's a lot of talk about cliques at the radio station. Quite honestly, there were people who did work and people who survived off the work of others. Although people did not do work, for instance, Utrice Lee boycotted several of the fundraisers, We didn't let that stop us. We continued to move forward.
And as a shop steward, let me tell you this right now. I advised her that it was her right to be sick if she was indeed sick. And she did have an obligation to pitch, but she did have a right to take vacation. And she could take vacation. So, you know, I was involved in some of those conversations. And I know that she was boycotting the fundraiser. I also know that many times she came in totally and completely unprepared and that she never participated in formulating programming for the fund drive, save I can remember only one program. And I could be wrong on that, but it's the program that I helped her with a musician from Yale University.
Yeah. And see, all of those things that, you know, while we were trying to keep everything together, there were people who were there trying to tear it apart, and now they come off in a real sanctimonious way, like they have, they're the only ones who have the best interest of the radio station at heart, and that's not true, because we chose not to go public and talk negatively about them. Now they're using that, that against us. Perhaps we should have let people know just what was happening with them.
You know, perhaps, I think, as you said, over and over, that our listeners, WBAI, aren't foolish, that they have been listening and paying close attention. I don't know how much Gary Null has listened, the program which you hosted in the morning and which I was a producer on.
That would be the show that he referred to as Wake Up?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, I like your show, Natural.
Okay, but you know, sometimes you do make a slip, but
you're right.
Yeah,
well, you and I do, but not because we're mere mortals.
Okay, wake up call, which on which we have had Gary Null on numerous occasions, even though we don't necessarily agree. Now, in terms of people making Gary Null's programming looking bad, Gary Null has alienated every single engineer, including, I think, throwing chairs at engineers in the station. We should talk about that. That he has cursed out engineers. Some of the people are right now on staff at WBAI who are down with the coup, and many of them, not just one, but many of them have put up with Gary Null's stuff. I, for one, won't put up with Gary Null's stuff. And as somebody who work at BAI primarily from 6 o'clock in the morning till 10 or 11 o'clock, I am under no obligation to help them hiring out the technical difficulties in Gary Null's show, even though I did that today, because I just can't help my stupid self. But after Gary Null cursed me out on the phone, not knowing who I was, I withdrew from helping him because I have some principle. I don't do things I don't believe in. I don't support causes that I don't believe in. I try not to contribute to things that I feel are morally wrong or personally wrong. And if somebody offend me, I have no obligation to continue to volunteer my time to do things for them. So that has happened in the past with Gary Null. So, yes, if his program sound a little messed up sometimes, and I was there in the station, I didn't lift a finger to help. But also, I didn't do anything to hinder his show. I just want folks to be clear on that, where I stand with Gary Null. He personally cursed me out on the telephone and hung up on me. And it's only after repeated begging by the folks in the station and his producer or assistant calling that I consented to get him back on the air, and that was one of the last time for at least a year that I did anything to help Gary Null's program come up on the air. I did help a little bit today to make sure he sounded good in the last part of the program, but, you know, that's personal with me. Gary Null, I think the information that he gives out on the issues of health, for the most part, is sound information and advice that a lot of us ought to take.